TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
How you doing?
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take it with triple chop. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Our guests coming up in 1 hour time. Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Al Strachan is going to join us, talk about the first round of the NHL playoffs. At 1:30, we're going to be joined by Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com, talk about the Chicago Blackhawks. And between then and now, and after all that, we will recap the first round of the NHL playoffs, the series that are completed and the series that are still underway. Richie, Ezzy, good afternoon to you both. How are you both doing?
Doing very well. It's a little bit chillier than it was earlier this week, and I thought maybe today we would be doing the round two preview, or at least partly a round two preview, but we still have four first round matchups left after last night. And, you know, we're talking about it a little bit off air with you boys. This first round has not disappointed, and really, the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs never disappoints, and you can't go to bed. I mean, you absolutely can't go to bed with the Anaheim-Detroit series, four games going to overtime, and with Toronto coming back on Boston. This is must-watch hockey. It really is. You can't not watch any of these games. It's been so exciting, and as usual, I'm excited to talk hockey once again.
Well said. Richie Pollock, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing really well, Drew. It's been as you said, I mean, the first round is always great. The overtimes have been unbelievable, and really tight series overall. I mean, there's been a couple of ones you could see which team has been the better one, but overall, I mean, a lot of these series have been complete coin flips. And you can make predictions as we have, and you can be right sometimes or wrong sometimes, but a couple of these series literally change on the deflection off a post or off somebody's leg, and that's the difference in an entire series.
Absolutely right. And we're going to start by talking about the Bruins-Leafs series this afternoon. Boston went into last night's game, and I think most people, if you read the pundits or you talked to most people, they thought that Boston would take care of business on home ice last night, being up 3-1. And, you know, kudos to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Kudos to James Reimer. Kudos to head coach Randy Carlyle, because the Toronto Maple Leafs have shown a lot more intestinal fortitude than I necessarily thought they would in taking this game to a sixth game. And right now, they're playing like they have nothing to lose.
I tweeted this last night, guys. I felt so good for James Reimer. And sure, I'm a little bit biased because he's from Manitoba and we're from Manitoba, but he really deserved it. The way he played yesterday was arguably the greatest performance, individual performance, that we've seen thus far. I know we're going to talk about the LA Kings, and Jonathan Quick was pretty darn good as well. Yep. But yesterday, everyone has seen that save already. If you were watching the game live where you saw the highlights, Reimer's save on Patrice Bergeron was arguably the nicest save that we've seen in a really long time. But he played well from start to finish. He only let in one goal, Chara's goal, in the third period, which he didn't have a lot of chance at stopping. But he absolutely stole that game. He needed to steal that game because the Toronto Maple Leafs were under attack in the third period. But Reimer's goaltending aside, the Toronto Maple Leafs are in the series, and they deserve credit for sticking around and forcing a Game 6. They played pretty well in Game 4 as well. And, you know, they outshot the Bruins badly in the first period, and the Bruins obviously came back in the third period wanting to end the series, and James Reimer stole it for them. They could have ended it a couple times. Yager, Sagan, there was a lot of chances. But the Toronto Maple Leafs have matched Boston's physicality, and I still think Boston's going to end up winning the series. But they deserve credit for sticking around. They've really brought their A game, if you want to call it that.
In desperations, we talked about it down the stretch in terms of the playoff race. I think that applies here, too. You see a Boston team that really isn't desperate to win. You know, they don't need to win. Would they like to win? Sure. Toronto's season's on the line. They come out, especially in that first period, as you mentioned, and they were really dominating Boston, and Rask was a huge factor there in keeping the game close. Then you get to the third period. Well, then they get a little bit desperate because they know they can stay home. So desperation plays a big factor, I think, in matchups that are fairly close for the most part. This, you know, this Boston's the better team here. I think everybody agrees. But Randy Carlyle's done a really nice job with this group, with the matchups, with expectations for his, especially considering the huge media firestorm after every game. I think Randy Carlyle's done a masterful job. Nobody's really, you know, Phaneuf made the mistake in game four. He admitted the mistake, which, by the way, I think is getting too much coverage about how he admitted the mistake. I mean, he has to do that.
I think the mistake itself, sorry to interrupt you, Richie, I think the mistake itself was a little bit overblown in itself. I mean, it's Dion Phaneuf made a bad mistake, but as far as I'm concerned, it was, in the playoffs, you can really pick apart every single little mistake, and I almost thought there was too much focus on that, but I agree with you that his reaction was definitely overblown.
Yeah, and Phaneuf hasn't been very, very good in the past, you know, in the five games of the series, but overall, like, what has Carlyle done? There hasn't been any controversies. Mm-hmm. And in Toronto and in that marketplace, that's success. That's keeping the reins on his players and on the media and not feeding the media anything, and I think it's been a, I don't think they're going to win the series, but his coaching job, I think his, and the way he's used his best players and the way his best players have really been really, have been really good. I think we talk about in a playoff series, you know, what needs to happen if this and that. Well, Van Riemsdyk scoring and Kessel scoring. Kadri hasn't been good, mind you. But the top guys who really came in as the top guys, Lupul, have been pretty good.
Do you think Jake Gardner, are we seeing the development of Jake Gardner, or is that a little bit overblown so far?
No, he's been really good. I mean, since he got in there, he's been really good. And there's no question Jake Gardner can skate, can move the puck, guys. So getting this experience is really important. And his upside is obviously greater than the players that were in place before, the Koskas and guys who've been injured, Mark Fraser, you know, who've done respectable jobs. I mean, Mark Fraser is loved in that dressing room. Koska's a hard worker. He's come from essentially nowhere to make a name for himself in Toronto. But at the end of the day, Gardner has a more natural ability. And with time, with Randy Carlyle grooming him, I think, and Randy Carlyle, of course, people sometimes forget, being a Norris Trophy defenseman, I think it'll serve him well.
He knows what he's talking about. Remember when we previewed this series less than 2 weeks ago, about 12 days ago? It was a Monday night, and we were previewing this series, and you look at the two teams top to bottom, and the Bruins are better in every area, and maybe with the exception of special teams, but Cody Franzen and Jake Gardner have become the number one defense pairing. And we talked about this on NHL Midweek, and it's a little bit of a broken record if you've listened to the show before, but I love Cody Franzen. I know Richie loves him. He's turned into a great defenseman, and he's shutting down Boston's top line. Tyler Seguin doesn't have a point in the series. Doesn't have a single point. Patrice Bergeron isn't lighting it up either. Yeah. That second line of Lucic and
Krejci
and Horton, even though Horton didn't have his best game, that's been their best line. And it's not even close, really.
The third line yesterday for the Bruins was very good. Peverly, I mean, Jagr on the boards is really something to watch.
He's still
just
got it, doesn't he?
Well, never mind got it. He's dominant. You just can't get him off the puck when he's on the boards.
He doesn't skate like he once did. Just doesn't have the power in his legs. I mean, obviously, based on his age. But
he's 41 years old.
His body control and stick handling ability is still tremendous. So if he can work off the boards and slow the game down, which he does, he can be an asset. And obviously, the save by Reimer with his knob of the stick yesterday was a huge one because Jagr almost tied it up.
Do you think that, you know, I mean, right now, do the Bruins understand, you know, going into Game 6 that they need to play with that extra desperation now?
And I think also the pressure, Drew. Another issue is the pressure, right?
Does it shift to Toronto, being that they're back on home ice?
It does. It does. Okay. And I think that Boston still has pressure, but Toronto has more than they did in Game 5. And let's see how they react to that. Because also they need Reimer to be great again. Remember, if Reimer's not that good yesterday, we're not talking about this.
Exactly right. I mean, and I want to talk about Randy Carlyle versus Claude Julien, the coaching matchup here. It seems to me that Carlyle is really taking Julien to task and is showing why that he's the better of the two coaches.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes I think he's outcoached him in the series. I don't know if it's that significantly, Drew. There's a couple of things. I mean, sometimes the matchups get overstated, and also I think sometimes coaches get obsessed with the matchups. And Carlyle's always going to be obsessed with them, so it's a question of how does Julien react. Mm-hmm. But another thing is Claude Julien the reason that Bergeron, Marchand, and Seguin just haven't got off the schneid?
Well, then what is that reason? That's okay, let's switch the question. What is that reason? Because you look at those three guys. And, I mean, I know we just talked about Cody Franson and we like his game.
Yep.
But, you know, you're generally right. speaking, you're going to take those three guys over anybody on the Leafs back end every day of the week.
Yeah.
So why haven't they been able to perform?
Some of it's luck. I mean, Sagan had some great games where he wasn't able to get on the board. And then Bergeron robbed yesterday by Reimer. I mean, a couple bounces here or there, those guys would have different results.
Mm-hmm.
Marchand maybe could be more effective. And overall, I think they'll just keep working at it. And we also should note, I mean, Julian mentioned, Sagan seems to play with a lot more pressure and weight on his shoulders when he's playing in Toronto, where he's from. So that's a factor as well, because he's certainly, he could be called the offensive catalyst of that line, just based on overall talent. Not that the other guys aren't extremely talented, but... So those are all factors, but I do think that Carlisle has done a nice job exploiting some of the matchup areas that, you know, that have been available to him, and especially on the road, even against, you know, when Ferentz was suspended, and taking advantage of Seidenberg and getting Kessel out there for that goal and the breakaway goal, he's had some nice moments. But again, Carlisle's working with what he can. That's why, you know, if they lose, you can say he's done a great job.
Richie, I think Drew's question is a good one, but you look at the game yesterday, it goes to overtime. Pardon me, it doesn't go to overtime. It's very close to going to overtime. And you're a Johnny Boychuk post or a Yager chance from going to overtime, pardon me. Yeah. Tyler Seguin had 6 shots on net yesterday, right, but he doesn't have any points. He's not producing, but the Bruins essentially are one game away from winning the series. So I don't think, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs by any means have found a way to frustrate the Bruins or anything like that. I think yesterday the Bruins didn't play a full 60 minutes. They really came out, and the Leafs played a really good road game. And the Leafs are a well-coached team. They're a talented team. James Van Riemsdyk is a guy, to me, that's turned up his physical game. You know that Phil Kessel hasn't been very good, but Tyler Bozak gets the shorthanded goal right after Reimer's save. Mm-hmm. And remember, Tyler Bozak got the shorthanded goal versus the Jets when they were here. I don't know if you guys remember that goal.
Well, they showed it on Elliot Friedman on Hockey Night in Canada last night, showed both goals and how they were sort of carbon copies of one another.
That goal is so key in that game when James Reimer is completely stymieing the Boston Bruins. But really, they're getting performances from a lot of other players. I think Nikolai Kuhlman's been really good. He hit Adam McQuaid after the whistle. For those who saw that, Adam McQuaid got up, but he's kind of turned up his... They've really gotten great performances in their victories. The Bruins, in their wins, have looked like the clearly better team. And let's not forget what happened in Game 4. A lot of people thought that the series was over after Game 4. So, sure, Randy Carlisle, I would say, is out-coaching Claude Julien right now. And you can start with the fact that the first line hasn't done anything. When you're shutting down the team's first line, and a guy like Tyler Seguin, one of the most dynamic scorers in the NHL, a guy that could make Canada's Olympic team, when he has no points in 5 games, you're doing something right.
What is Tyler Bozak? He's an unrestricted free agent after this year. What is he worth on the open market? How do you quantify a guy who plays that game?
I'd love to see him as a Winnipeg Jet, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, what he is, Drew, is probably a second-line center at tops who can win face-offs and can play in all situations if you need him to. What's he worth is a good question.
I mean on Wednesday's show, we asked Arthur Staple of Newsday, how much money has Mark Strait made for himself with his performance for the Islanders these playoffs? How much money has Bozak made for himself?
Richie makes an interesting point, though. The thing with Bozak, what they're dealing with in Toronto, Richie, is that Tyler Bozak isn't a number one line center, and they're kind of, you know, anointing Nazem Kadri, the future number one center of the team. I don't know about that as far as him being a top number one center. I think he's got the offensive ability to be a number one center, but he lacks size and maybe the two-way ability. But that's kind of the problem, and that's probably why Bozak hasn't been offered a contract yet, Drew. But as far as his value, I think he's got pretty good value. And, you know, at 27 years old, I believe is his age, 26 or 27 years old, he's in the prime of his career. So he should get a nice contract, and he's played pretty well in the playoffs as well.
You're looking probably in the 3-4 range, around 3.5. for a 3-year deal kind of thing.
Sure. Well, that'll be an interesting one to watch in the offseason. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Rangers-Capitals series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. We want to hear what you have to say about the first round of the NHL playoffs. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. You can also check out IllegalCurve.com for all your latest Winnipeg Jets, NHL news, OHL finals with Mark Scheifele in them for the Barrie Colts. Whatever you need in the world of hockey, it's there for you on IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, moving to the Washington-New York Rangers series. Capitals win last night in overtime. Mike Ribeiro gets the goal. Up 3-2 now. Game 6 tomorrow night back in Madison Square Garden. Pardon me, tomorrow afternoon, I believe a 3:30 start time back in Madison Square Garden. You can catch that game on TSN, of course. Is this the sort of the most under the radar of the first round series, sort of?
It's possible. It's a close series.
Yeah.
I guess it's under the radar in the sense that Washington went up two games, and there it's maybe been overshadowed a little bit by the Anaheim-Detroit series or the Boston-Toronto series, or even before it, Drew, the Montreal-Ottawa series, because remember what was happening after the first couple of games of the Montreal-Ottawa series. You guys were in Toronto, but after those first two games with the suspension, that series was looking good, and then Montreal decided not to show up. And unfortunately, I'm going to be in Montreal next week, and I'm not going to see any round two playoff action. And we're going to do a post-mortem of the Montreal Canadiens a little bit later, because I think we need to after the way they showed up in game five. That was absolutely embarrassing, but I'm getting a little bit off topic here. This series, they were separated by 1 point going into the playoffs, and the Washington Capitals, we talked about it, were one of the hottest teams going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. And yesterday, they outplayed the New York Rangers. And still, I'm looking at the New York Rangers, and I'm waiting for the top guys to step up. Rick Nash didn't step up yesterday. He's been okay. He was good in game four. But the New York Rangers still, I mean, Brad Richards isn't getting it done. And really, it's been Henrik Lundqvist keeping him in there. Because the Washington, that score, it could have been a lot worse than it was yesterday if you watched that game.
Three shots total for Nash and Richards yesterday in that game five. And you look at the Capitals' performance, and you mentioned the Capitals sort of took the action to the Rangers after the Rangers opened the scoring in the first minute of the game. The Rangers seem to be playing what they were playing last year in the playoffs, where everybody just clogs the net and no shots can get through. And the Capitals were fortunate that the puck bounced to Mike Ribeiro for the OT winner last night.
Well, when you get a series that close, Drew, again, it gets down to the bounces, right? And Tortorella kind of wants to play this game. I mean, Washington would like to keep the pace up a little bit more, but, Tortorella wants to play it close. And he wants to take his chances with bounces and such. And in reality, I mean, you're looking at a series that hasn't had one road team win. And with the Rangers probably the favorites to win at home, and then you take a Game 7 coin flip. And who knows? I mean, the goalies have been really good.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I like about the Rangers is that you can see that their additions have been helpful. Broussard and Zuccarello throughout the year that they've added really add a nice passing element to the team. And Broussard is actually leading the team in scoring right now. And so I like those guys on the half boards and the power play. But as you mentioned, Richards, I mean, he has to be better. I mean, just has to be better. And his foot speed's killing him right now. And he's never been fast, but he's slowed down.
Well, he's getting older.
It's hard for him to keep up. And so if he can't produce on the power play, how's he going to produce even straight?
It's funny you mentioned the power play. Maybe not funny, but I'm glad you brought up the power play. I tend to say that's funny when it's not funny. But they get the two power plays early on in the game against the Washington Capitals. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a great opportunity. And remember, Brian Boyle scored, 52, 53 seconds into the game there?
Yeah.
So things were looking good for the Rangers. Yeah. And they got the two power plays, and they did absolutely nothing. And we've talked about it on this show, on NHL Midweek. The Rangers don't have a very good power play, and it hasn't been good this series, and they did absolutely nothing. And it's not like they don't have guys that can play, but for the most part, Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi have shut down Ovechkin, especially in the last three games. So, I mean, it's not like Alex Ovechkin is killing them. Joel Ward scored yesterday. I mean, it's really the depth guys that are killing them. And
the third line for the Capitals has been probably their best line, especially yesterday. I mean, the speed that you saw from Matthew Perreault and
Jason Chimera,
who we know is just lightning fast.
Jason Chimera took out Ryan Clough later in the game, and he didn't come back.
Right.
He's been effective. And I mean, we don't wish that Ryan Clough gets knocked out of the game, but his mix of kind of physicality and speed, and he's a very effective player.
And I mean, I know it was an overtime game and everything, but you look at the minutes that the Rangers are logging on their top guys again, just like they did last year, where they really only played four or five defensemen through the course of a game. I mean, yesterday you look at Dan Girardi, 29 minutes of ice time. You look at Ryan McDonagh, 29 minutes of ice time. Those guys might be doing a very good job at mitigating the effect of Alex Ovechkin, but it's the depth guys that are just killing the Rangers at this point.
And they're not easy minutes. You talk about there's 29 minutes is not always the same player to player.
Sure.
And New York plays a very physical style, blocks a lot of shots. It's a more strenuous 29 minutes than if you're Duncan Keith playing in the offensive zone all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We should mention, too, Drew, just quickly here, you had Eric Fair playing on the second line, and it's a good opportunity for a good Winkler boy to play on the second line. That's because Marty Erat is out. Mm-hmm. Brooks Like is already out. So, the Rangers are for all intents and purposes, healthy, asterisk Mark Stahl's not in the lineup.
And Ryan Clough to some degree.
And Ryan Clough, but, those are, especially with Ryan Clough as an addition, Mark Stahl is huge because, as we've talked about before, now you're asking another guy to step up, and Steve Emminger on that bottom pairing hasn't been very, very good. But really, you're lacking offense on Washington's end, and they haven't really taken advantage of it. And in yesterday's game, I really felt that you could see that Washington was dictating the pace. Washington was better. New York had some chances, but
Is it your expectation that New York holds at home and this goes seven?
Yeah, but a tight one.
Oh, I mean, every game has been, at least the last four games have been, really one-goal games here or there. And it just seems to me that this series is destined to go seven just by the nature in which the style the Rangers are playing. They're going to hope if the Rangers get their way, they'll jump out to a one-goal lead. Yep. And then they're going to put five guys, really within, right in front of the net and say, get the shot through if you can.
Or you have one of those crazy games that all these stars break out and then it's 5-4, but unlikely, but that could happen as well.
You look at the Capitals, and as you mentioned, their injuries. They're also without Marty Erat. He's not going to play tomorrow either. He's got a wrist or a forearm injury, something along those lines. You mentioned Eric Fair. Anybody see this coming? This step that he's taken, both in the regular season and in the playoffs, where he really looks like he could be a solid power forward again?
Not me.
I thought his career was done.
He looked slow last year. Obviously, he couldn't have his two shoulder surgeries and didn't look like he could engage in contact, but his skating last year was, he just couldn't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good story. He played 21 minutes yesterday on the second line.
Yeah.
He had three hits. He didn't get any points, but he's kind of the guy that they have to elevate to that position.
And you can notice him. You're noticing him there, but he's not being noticed for the wrong reasons. He doesn't look over his head. He looks comfortable playing in that sort of second line role right now.
And based on the way he played for the Winnipeg Jets last year, you probably thought that, he might consider the Europe route or whatever, but he was awarded a 2-year contract.
Well, he got that
towards the end of the year.
He got a contract extension from the Capitals,
his
play.
It's good for him. It's a good story. But really, it all comes back to me, what's happening in this series. And this might be the closest series. Anaheim and Detroit has obviously gone to four games, but really, these teams have played how many times every year, it seems like, in the last, I think it's like four out of the last 6 years. Four to 5 years. So every year, and it's always close. And I think that the advantage for the Rangers is they're stronger in goal. I think a little bit stronger on defense. I think Washington has maybe the depth advantage, but you take away Erat, who's their captain, a two-way player. Really, the Rangers, for me, especially winning those two games, I really thought Washington was ripe for the picking yesterday, and yesterday they kind of came out flat. I go back to those power plays in the first period, up 1-0. They really had a chance to put the nail in the coffin, and they really didn't. And then Washington took that, got momentum, came back in the game, and they won a close game. And it's
funny you mentioned the power play. Adam Oates, prior to the game, said he was worried that his team was going to come out a little bit tight, and they certainly did. Like you said, the first 10 minutes of the game, the Rangers had a very good opportunity to really take a stranglehold. And if the Rangers jump out to a 2-goal lead, based on everything you've seen, it's going to be hard for a team to come back against that.
The power play, for as much as we talk about the Rangers blocking shots, the Rangers couldn't get shots through on those power plays.
Yeah.
If I could steal one of Richie's terms from last week in talking about the Ottawa Senators-Montreal Canadiens series, it almost seems like Adam Oates has a better pulse. You mentioned this about Paul MacLean.
Yeah.
It almost seems like Adam Oates has a better pulse on his team because he kept going back to that third line. He kept throwing out Chimera out there. He kept throwing out Perreault out there, Ward. He kept throwing those guys out there, and they were outplaying the New York Rangers and causing a lot of problems for the New York Rangers. And it seems like, as far as John Tortorella goes, he hasn't really found a way to get the most out of Rick Nash and Brad Richards. And the reason why that's so important is they went out and they got Rick Nash to score goals. Simply, he's not a checker, he's not a two-way guy. He's a guy that uses his speed off the rush, and he scores goals. He's a goal scorer. He hasn't scored a lot of goals. And it's nice that Derek Brassard is leading the team with, I think it's 6 or 7 points. but he can't do it all himself. And they didn't expect him to do that as well. They expected him to give them secondary scoring, not primary scoring. So those guys, if they're going to win the series, they got to come from behind now and win two games. They got to get going.
Any keys to the game, game six, or, you know, if we're getting ahead of ourselves, but game seven, anything that jumps out at you as being key, or is it just sort of going to be similar to how the first five games were played?
Rick Nash's got to get the puck on net. He's being a little fancy sometimes. Got to put the puck on net. Drive the net, too. He made a play yesterday where he was kind of the spinorama pass in front. Take that puck and drive the net. And if you want to be, you know, this is really his first playoff and second playoffs, aside from the one with Columbus, and if he needs to make a difference here.
Sure.
For all the criticism of Marian Gaborik, Nash is there to replace him, and he needs to take that step.
It would also help the Rangers, I think, if Brian Boyle doesn't take a slashing penalty right in front of the officials to put the Capitals on the power play.
Yeah, that too. But, I mean, you need your best players to be your best players, and right now, I think Brassard has been really good. Right. But Nash has got to get up there on the scoring chart.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the first series that has gone to a Game 7. You're listening to TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Regardless of your talent level or how it happened, if you suffer pulls, tears, strains, or spasms, Elite Sports Injury Clinic is your destination to get you back to health. Three convenient locations throughout Winnipeg means Elite Sports Injury Clinic is always readily available. Check them out online at physiowinnipeg.com. Gentlemen, we have a Game 7, and there's nothing quite like a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You can almost say, based on the way they've been playing this series, though, that every game between the Red Wings and the Ducks has been a Game 7, in that they've all gone to overtime, practically. Four out of six games in that first-round series have gone to overtime. You know, the Red Wings had a 3-1 lead last night. I know that myself, I turned off that game because the Rangers-Washington overtime was getting started. I was sort of following along with it a bit on Twitter. And then all of a sudden, it's 3-3. Before you blink, the Ducks had tied it up at 3. You know, what's going to be the difference in that Game 7?
Well, that's a loaded question, Drew. I mean, you could say kind of what we said coming into the series is, you know, out of Zetterbergen, Datsyuk, that line, Abdelkader, that line, or looking at the other side with Perry and Getzlaff and Ryan or whoever they're going to do that. Are they going to, you know, who's going to win that matchup? Because, and I know that guys like Emerson Edom have been amazing, and Bonino have been great.
Palmieri as well.
Palmieri has been great, exactly. Yep. And the speed of the depth players in Anaheim has been a huge factor in the series.
Richie, you mentioned the top lines. Right now, and yesterday, last night, it's not even close. The Zetterberg-Datsyuk-Abdelkader line dominated Anaheim's top line yesterday. And I know that they got the goal to tie it up and send it to overtime. But yesterday, to me, Pavel Datsyuk comes out of kind of the corner half boards and kind of beats Francois Beauchemin, cuts into the middle on his backhand.
What a goal.
And then Ryan Getzlaff poke checks him, goes around Ryan Getzlaff, and then backhands it off the post and in right there was one of the craziest displays of how good Pavel is. I mean, this guy, is it even close that he's a Hall of Famer? It's absolutely nuts how good he is. And you hear about this all the time from players saying, what guy has the most skill in the NHL? And they all say, sure, it's going to be Crosby, maybe Ovechkin, maybe Stamkos. But Pavel Datsyuk is almost above all of those guys.
Yeah.
And it's really incredible. Those guys yesterday, you talk about this time and time again, about putting a team on your back. You know, Andrew Ladd, we heard about that a lot with the Winnipeg Jets, and most nights he did. But both of those guys...
Yeah.
Each had 3 points.
Henrik Zetterberg
and
was
amazing. That was their, like, the ice was theirs yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They were all over the ice, and in that overtime, Zetterberg scored their second goal and then scored the goal in overtime. It was unbelievable to watch those two guys, and the Red Wings were saying it themselves how amazing it was to watch them play. And what about Justin Abdelkader? I don't know what he did in a past life, but why was he lucky to be playing on the top line of those two guys? Because, no offense to Justin Abdelkader, but he's a bit of a passenger on that line, because what those guys are doing right now individually is, it's really astonishing. And those guys really won them that game. Jimmy Howard played well and the defense played well. Cronwall's done a good job. And, you know, Brendan Smith, it was unfortunate that goal went off of him. But really, those two guys, I think, might have given the best individual performance, you know, with the exception of goaltenders that we've seen so far.
What did you think of the non-call by the official on the trip that led to Anaheim's tying goal?
Well, Richie, he was standing right there. The ref, I forget who the referee was. Maybe we can check it on the score here. But he was standing right. It was either Mark Jonette or Brad Watson. Those were the referees in that game. I think it was Brad Watson, if I remember correctly. But he was standing right there. And Corey Perry, it was a trip. It was an absolute trip. And you have to call it. And they got away with one. I don't think you can deny that it was a trip. And you can even look at the way Corey Perry reacts after he trips the guy. And, hey, they got away with one. And it turned out well for Detroit. They scored early in overtime, won the game. But it was a trip.
You know, back to what we're talking about before, Drew, in terms of, you know, what the key is. And if you look at Anaheim right now, we talked about this, I believe, on Wednesday. Corey Perry has 2 assists in 6 games.
Uh-huh.
Hockey's a funny game in that you can sit quietly, kind of like Milan Lucic, throughout the regular season, and you have a whole new season to make a name for yourself again. A clean slate.
Dustin Penner,
yep. Same idea. And for Corey Perry, that kind of clean slate probably starts in Game 7 tomorrow. Because he's done nothing.
Would you agree that Anaheim has been the better of the two teams?
Well, I mean, Detroit's won all 3 games in overtime. Anaheim's won 1 of the 3 games in overtime. They've had those comebacks, and Detroit's won both those games. That's debatable, but I'd probably say that's a tough one to say.
But it seems like, and I made this point on Wednesday, that it seems like when Anaheim really needs to step it up.
Yeah, they can.
They can, and there's nothing Detroit can do to stop them.
But it's not always playing all the time that way.
That's the problem, is that they seem to be inconsistent in this series, because I know that nobody ever always plays at 100% level.
Right.
But if they've been able to play between, you know, if Bruce Boudreau had been able to get everything out of his guys for the majority of every game, you think the Ducks should have won this series relatively handily by now.
Well, they've had a couple of chances in terms of, a couple of chances to make it 3-1 in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have probably been it. Yeah. And to win the series.
Yeah.
Yesterday in overtime. Now, obviously, there wasn't a long overtime. But, I mean, the chances have been there.
And, I mean, and I know the Red Wings have all the veteran leadership and the know-how.
Yep.
You know, to...
Up front.
But on the... Yeah, to frustrate an opponent.
Yeah.
But it just seems like the Ducks are almost taking a little bit of the easy way out every game until they're behind the 8-ball, and then they step it up.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think that the Ducks have played well in spurts, but they're almost giving Detroit every opportunity to get back into it. And I don't think that it necessarily falls on the play of Jonas Hiller, because he's been pretty good. The goals that are beating him, they're good goals.
Yeah.
I mean, what goal yesterday could you say was a weak goal? Zetterberg's shots were both amazing, and Datsyuk's goal we talked about earlier was unbelievable off the post. You can't stop that. You're going to have to really make a miraculous save to stop that. But the Ducks, if you're a Red Wings fan, the Ducks have shown the ability that they can come back late and score at will. I mean, they're really getting goals from a lot of players. And they have to be getting the goals from a lot of players because Corey Perry doesn't have a goal yet. And Corey Perry is your top goal scorer.
That's
so
right.
You're getting goals from Emerson Edom. You're getting goals from Palmieri, Bonino. Ryan's contributed with a couple goals. But they really have 3 good scoring lines. And Timo Solani hasn't even really put the puck in the net as much as he can as well. So this game coming up on Sunday is going to be really close. And if it goes to overtime, it would be incredible because as we were told yesterday by Ken Daniels, this is the first time in history the Red Wings have ever gone to 4 OT games in a series, which is incredible. Think of all the playoff games Detroit has played. So really, the way things are looking, it should be an overtime game, but you know, Anaheim has, skill-wise, I think Anaheim has a lot more skill than Detroit. But when you look at the top skill players of Detroit, they're almost matching the Anaheim skill players, but there's more depth on the Anaheim side. And as far as Detroit goes, you're seeing them do a pretty good job at shut down Corey Perry. Nicholas Cronwall deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah,
he's a good defenseman, and he stepped in the role that Nicholas Lidstrom used to have, and he's learned well from Lidstrom.
Yeah, I mean, he's been great. When we talk about those first lines, they need to get that going. The interesting part, Drew, you talk about, you know, the four overtimes. It hasn't been like the L.A.-St. Louis series and everything's a one goal this way, one goal that way. It's been back and forth, up 4-1, tied 4-all, up 3-1, tied 3-all, you know, late goals. It's been really a nice change from maybe some of the other series that are just so close. And the style of play, and we're going to talk about this in rapid fire, the most exciting series so far. But the style of play is a little more old-fashioned. Bruce Boudreau has allowed his players, and always has, kind of do their own thing a little bit.
Yep.
And there's a structure there that's a looser structure than mm-hmm. you're going to find some other teams. And Mike Babcock, we've seen over time, has moved away from his north-south to allow for more east-west play, as they call it. And Kenny Holland told us that on NHL Midweek earlier this year. And you see that as well. I mean, if you look at Detroit's lines through and through, you're talking about lines that can skate. And Gustav Nyquist, a really good puck possession guy. You know, you're learning a little bit more about Joakim Andersson. Brunner has been a really pleasant surprise all year, and their defense is a skating puck moving defense. So you're really seeing a contrast in styles. I mean, for all the people talk about LA-St. Louis, you're seeing a completely different series here. It doesn't mean that there's not skill in that LA-St. Louis series, but it just means the style of play and the speed is a huge factor. I mean, look at the speed factor in this series. The ability to skate of a lot of players, the pace is great.
What about discipline? Anaheim did not have a single power play yesterday. They're not getting any chances on the power play. It's 5-on-5. And Richie mentioned, you know, east-west. And, you know, what that means is basically skill players can do their thing. And
that's right.
And you're right about that. And this series has been highly entertaining. It's almost the opposite of the Rangers and Capitals. Completely different. A lot more exciting to watch. Nothing against the Rangers and Capitals as franchises, but it's really a lot different to watch. You're seeing a lot more scoring chances. Yeah. And it's better for fans, quite honest.
Oh yeah, I mean the Rangers Capitals series. I mean, it's been dull just because the Rangers want it that way. I mean, you know, taking shots that are blocked constantly for 60 minutes isn't the most riveting hockey to watch.
Amen to that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm telling anybody anything they didn't know with that comment. Anyways, let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the St. Louis LA Kings series, which ended last night with the Kings winning 4-2. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 12. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in about 10 or 12 minutes' time, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Al Strachan is going to join us to talk about the first round of the NHL playoffs. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Ian Bagg is at the Comedy Club. The 7:45 show is already sold out. I believe last time I checked, which was about 2.5 hours ago, the 10:30 show had 20 tickets left. So if you want to go to Rumors tonight, better get on the phone, 488-4520, or give them, or go online at rumorscomedyclub.com. And of course, coming up in August, Steve-O from Jackass, best known from Jackass on MTV, is going to be at Rumors, so you can look forward to that. Get your tickets for Steve-O.
Looking forward to Steve-O. Hopefully, yeah. I'll get out to Rumors for Steve-O.
And he's going to call you Ezio.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was a big fan of the Jackass movies. I believe there was just two, maybe three. Though he's a funny guy, and he's clean now. He doesn't do drugs, or from what I've heard, he was on Howard Stern. So. But apparently, Remo tells me his stand-up is very funny.
Is Remo here?
Remo tells you that Steve-O is very funny. Is that how that just worked?
Is Remo here now?
That's right.
Yeah, he's in the other room there. A little bit of a late arrival today for Remo.
What a surprise.
Here.
Remo's late.
Anyways, moving on to the LA Kings-St. Louis Blues series, which ended last night with the Kings defeating the Blues, winning the series 4-2.
I mean, we got to talk about the penalty goal.
Yeah.
And I just want to interject there, Drew, because this goal, to me, you know, I read about it in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch this morning. We might have Jeremy Rutherford on. I'm not sure what's going on with that, but he's been traveling. I want to see the perspective of St. Louis on that goal. Could you watch in the game, it's 1-1, and you're seeing kind of Penner turn the corner around the offside dot there, the neutral zone dot on right by the bench, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, if you're Roman Polak, who the puck tipped off of,
yep,
you have two options. First is, you go at Penner because there's 3 seconds left and Penner's slow as can be, mm-hmm. or you get the heck out of the way. I actually prefer number one. Just go at him.
Like, just start charging at him. Take away that space. He can't get by you. They're both not the best skaters. He can't get by you.
Doesn't have time.
And there's no time left.
Yeah.
Or you get out of the way and let Elliott face a regular slap shot because the puck tipped off Elliott. And Hitchcock said, you know, not to blame.
Tipped off Polak.
Sorry, Polak, and went by Elliott. Never mind the fact that Backus had a couple opportunities to get the puck in deep. I don't even care. I know he had the opportunity to get the puck in deep. He didn't do it. But that doesn't matter. You have to know the situation. Penner has only one option. And as Penner said, guys, 20 guys on my bench yelling to shoot, shoot, shoot. You know that's the only option. It's like in basketball, playing off a guy with 2 seconds left and you know he needs a three-pointer.
He's going to throw it up regardless of where he is.
And they just sat back. And that was it.
You know what's funny, Richie, about Roman Polak? He's a guy that Ken Hitchcock over the years, well, over the last 2 years, has depended on a lot on defense. And on Drew Doughty's goal as well. You guys remember Drew Doughty scored the first goal in that game. He fakes the shot on Polak, and then Polak backs up, and then he rips it over Brian Elliott. I thought Polak also kind of backed up. He hasn't had a very good series for the St. Louis Blues, and you don't put this all on Roman Polak. But for the most part, guys, yesterday, the St. Louis Blues held the LA Kings to 16 shots. It's not like the LA Kings were completely dominating the St. Louis Blues yesterday at home. The St. Louis Blues played a pretty good road game, and they were keeping it pretty close, and that's what you want to do on the road. You want to take the home crowd out of it. And by the way, we should mention Roman Polak pretty much scored the goal. It went off of Chris Porter, but he took the shot. So Roman Polak also had an assist in the game. So, I mean, he didn't have the worst game, but offensively, but defensively, he was on the ice for both of those goals, Doughty's goal and Penner's goal. And again, you know, you hate to lose a game like that. And you heard Ken Hitchcock after the game saying, I'm going to tell the guys this isn't good enough if we want to be a contending team. Right. And this is a contending team. This is a team that the window is wide open. You talk about the Canucks or the Sharks, the window closing. This is a young team. You had Jay Bouwmeester playing his... It's tough to believe that this was Jay Bouwmeester's first playoff action, but it was. And, you know, it's not like he played the best hockey of his career, but he played pretty good, and Pietrangelo was decent top defenseman. But they really... Well, they really struggled offensively, and you look at guys
how,
like...
How many more years?
David Backus had one goal.
Let me ask you guys this question. We're going to ask Jeremy Rutherford this if he's able to join us. He's in transit from Los Angeles back to St. Louis. How many more years can the Blues go with having these...
This core?
Never mind this core so much as not having that one go-to guy.
Well, David Backus to me...
How many more years can they do that?
Richie, David Backus to me, and then we were talking about this, you know... at the beginning of the year, last year even, people were talking, you know, David Backus is going to be the captain of the Team USA at the Olympics. And he is a great two-way player. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, really, to be honest with you, if David Backus can put the team on his back. And the reason why...
No pun intended.
Exactly. The reason why that's important is because every single year, you can look at one guy who does it. And sometimes it's multiple guys. When you're talking about a team like the Chicago Blackhawks... It can be a couple guys. It can be Kane. It can be Taves and Hossa. But there has to be somebody. To me, the guy that really was the best player for the Blues throughout the series was Alex Steen, and second, probably Sobotka. Sobotka was really good.
He was good.
On the second line. But David Backus didn't have a good series, and he's the captain of that team, a guy that's depended. He didn't have the best regular season as well. But, you know, you look at the series, it was so close. The Blues lost 4 straight games, just like last year. So that's 2 years in a row that they've gotten beaten by the Kings. And you look at the team and you're like, okay, well, Elliott was really good. He was really good during the regular season.
Not good in the last 3 games, though.
He wasn't excellent in the last 3 games, but yesterday, I mean, he let in 2 goals. Right.
Fair enough.
He wasn't awful, right? He wasn't the reason why they lost. And the defense is really good,
except we
pointed out Roman Polak. But, I mean, they lost 2-1. It's not like they only gave up 16 shots. And you kind of look at the team and you're like, they kind of lack a little bit of offensive punch. And that's been the same story for the St. Louis Blues for the last 2 years. They're scoring by committee team. They don't have a Corey Perry or Ryan Getzlaf, so they depend on scoring by committee. And when you have David Backus, Andy McDonald, David Perron didn't do much in that series. And he's a guy that I really like.
He didn't do much all year.
He didn't do a lot all year.
Where's Andy McDonald?
There's a lot of guys who, you know, when push
what
comes... When push comes to shove for the St. Louis Blues, there's a lot of guys who become passengers. There's nobody that necessarily is the engineer on that train. and they have a ton of talent, and we've spoken about their talent for how many years now?
Yep.
Is it been 3 years or has it been 4 years where we keep talking about all their young talent, but nobody ever steps up and drives that train for the St. Louis Blues? You're going to see a lot of the St. Louis Blues next year. They're in the same division as the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
And you're going to look down their roster, and you're going to tick off people that you would love to have on your team. But nobody ever wants to be the guy to drive that team when it matters the most.
Okay, last year they were 2 points out of winning the President's Trophy. Everybody remembers last year how good they were in the second half of the season. They were easily the best team in the NHL in the second half of last season. And this year they're the fourth seed. And you look at them and you're Eric Duhatchik was on our show at the beginning of the year and he said, "I'm going to go with the Blues," and he changed his answer before the playoffs. But you look at the St. Louis Blues and they're ripe.
I did too.
They're ripe to be an elite team. And I think it tells you a lot. It really does. After the games, you hear coaches talk and they give you the regular cliches. But when Ken Hitchcock was asked, "What are you going to tell your players after this series?" he said, "I'm going to tell them that it's not good enough." And coming from a guy like Ken Hitchcock, one of the greatest coaches in the postmodern era, he really is. It really means a lot. I mean, these guys didn't step up against the defending Stanley Cup champions. They were beaten by a better team.
When you talk about the depth scoring, it goes both ways, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a bunch of guys who can contribute, but when you really need goals, some of those guys are 60-point guys, not 80, 90-point guys, and you can't ride them. And if you see in the playoffs, like, who's succeeding right now? I mean, you're adding guys like, you have the Taves, obviously go off the Schneider, but Taves and Kane, the best teams. Like,
look at Detroit. We just talked about them last segment. Look at the game last night. Yeah. They needed a win. They're on home ice versus on the road. And who led Detroit yesterday? Zetterberg and Datsyuk.
Agreed.
The best players on the team.
And so the question is, do you take some of that depth? Do you move it out for a big-time guy?
For a guy who knows how to win in the playoffs. This team doesn't seem to... I mean, this series was so close. I mean, you look at the numbers in this series.
Yeah, Quick was amazing.
Quick was amazing, but we knew that Jonathan Quick was going to be amazing because he's one of the best goalies in the league. Yeah. All six games in this series were decided by one goal. The only time in league... only the second time in league history that a series of six or more games has had each game decided by one goal. 98.8% of the time in the series, the game was either tied or they were a one-goal lead for one of the teams.
It's incredible.
98.8% of the time. The only exception was a five-minute stretch in Game 4.
What about the
St. Louis Blues just don't have that guy. They don't have that guy who can be their... He can be their closer. He can be the guy who leads them to the promised land.
Reading the St. Louis Post this match this morning, too, I mean, a lot of those sentiments were in there. How many missed shots did they have? How many missed opportunities did they have? And how many passengers did they have? Now, this isn't a team that needs many changes, all honesty. But you need to get a top-end guy.
You might need to get rid of one of the guys who are, they have so much in that. They have a lot of guys who can be top six players.
Look at their lines. I mean, you have, one line is Berglund, Oshie, Perron. One line is Backes, Schwartz, and Steen. One line is McDonald, Sobotka, and Stewart. I mean, you have a bunch of guys who are the same. In terms of output,
yeah,
more or less.
So you might have to package a couple of those guys. Maybe take to just get the other a guy in there who will say to his team and will stand up and say it's not good enough for us to be good in the regular season.
Just do it on the ice. Forget staying in the room. Just do it on the ice. I mean, a guy who can just take over.
In both senses, yeah, exactly. A guy who can take over and refuses to let them wilt. I mean, it's hard to give up that goal with 0.2 seconds left in the second period.
But
there has to be somebody in that dressing room who won't let that goal be the deciding goal.
And it's funny you mentioned that because watching that game, I thought to myself, okay, there's the out right there. There's the out. Ah, that shouldn't have happened. That shouldn't have happened. If you listen to the quotes after the game, they did talk a lot about that goal. But they should have tried to, not tried, but they shouldn't, somebody needs to make a difference there and say, forget it. We're going to not make that an issue. We're going to score.
Right.
And I realize they're playing Quick, and I realize they're playing the defending Stanley Cup champions. But
when it's that close...
I know we're up against it, but quickly, look at the past Stanley Cup champions. Has anybody really won? Maybe you could point to Carolina, but has anybody really won with that scoring by committee without the superstar?
No. You need a guy to lead the team.
Blackhawks, Bruins, all those guys. I mean, they don't have any guys who are at the level of those top-end guys.
That's right. And they need that guy who's going to put the team on their back. Let's go to break. When we come back, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Al Strachan is going to join us to talk about the first round of the NHL playoffs. You're listening to TSN 1290. One hour down,
2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's a Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, Al Strachan. Al, good afternoon, and how are you?
I'm great. How's yourself?
Doing very well ourselves, thank you. This first round of the playoffs has been tremendously entertaining, so
yeah.
You know, can't go wrong with that.
Well, I presume you would rather have had your team in them.
That's true. You're right. We would rather have had our team in them, but one of these years, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Al, we got to start with the Toronto-Boston series, sort of a two-part question here. Are you surprised that the Leafs have been able to push the series to 6 games? And who deserves the bulk of the credit in Toronto for extending the series back to Toronto?
The answer to the second one is quite easy. It would be James Reimer. And yes, I am surprised, and I think any hockey fan who isn't a fan of one of the teams would have to be. If you're just an impartial fan, I believe you would have had to suspect that Boston would dominate this based upon their recent record against Toronto and based upon Toronto's recent record against the rest of the world and based upon the fact that Boston won the Cup a couple of years back. You would have had to expect complete domination, but having said that, you couldn't say that Toronto doesn't deserve to be where they are at the moment. They've played very well, and they've had great goaltending, and perhaps you may or may not be able to make the case that Boston has outplayed the other part of the team. I don't know, but it doesn't matter because Reimer is part of the team, and as a team, Toronto's played very well.
Now, in terms of Montreal, you know, much was made about Michel Therrien when he returned behind the bench for the Habs, having changed his ways. Do you think that was, you know, maybe in terms of his temperament, do you think that was overstated? And do you think his lack of personal discipline cost his team against the Sens?
I thought that when they made the moves in Montreal over the course of the summer and decided to go into a different direction, they made a number of excellent acquisitions with regard to Bergevin as the general manager. Rick Dudley is one of the smartest people in hockey, as inside hockey people will tell you, and he's one of the primary architects of that Chicago team that won the Stanley Cup. Scott Mellenby, another very good, very insightful hockey guy. I was disappointed when they selected the coach. I think they could have done better. What happened there, although I don't believe it's ever been printed, perhaps because the people in Montreal aren't as sharp as they sometimes think they are, is that they offered the job to Patrick Roy, 2 years at $2.45 million a year. And Patrick said he thought that it would take longer than 2 years, and that if he was going to make that kind of commitment, he wanted a longer-term contract, and they didn't want to give it to him. And that's why they ended up with Therrien. And I don't like the man's approach, and I don't think Leopards changed their spots an awful lot, and I don't think he did an awful lot to help them get where they were. As to whether he cost them a game, I don't know. He might have. You could probably make that case. But I would think that your quality coaches would have had things under control there. And I thought that after that debacle in that one game, I was suggesting that perhaps it was time for Bergevin to go into the dressing room and say something along the line, gentlemen, this is not what we expect from the Montreal Canadiens. In any sense of the term, we expect you to play better, and we expect you to respond better, and we expect you to act better. I can't see Therrien doing any of that. And if you've got to call on your general manager, I don't know if he ever did it, but if you're ever in the position where you think the general manager has to come in and do that, then there's perhaps something wrong with the coaching. So I think he did a good job doing what he had during the year, but I think he was pretty well coached himself. He was told what to do. He was told that they had to go after the puck. They had to use their little guys to do their best and sort of gang attack the thing. Don't bother trying for the pretty goals. Just go for the goal, all that sort of stuff. And they did that. But then when it came time for character, it didn't work so well.
Al, sticking with the Ottawa-Montreal series, how much credit does Ottawa general manager Brian Murray deserve for turning this team around from where it was at a couple years ago?
Brian Murray built that Anaheim team that won the Stanley Cup. Brian Burke takes credit for it, but all the key acquisitions were made by Brian Murray. Burke came in and was fortunate enough that Brian Murray had left him, not Scott, what's the other Niedermeyer?
His name Rob Niedermeyer.
Rob. Yeah. Yeah.
And he wanted to play with his brother, Scott did, so he went there. Well, that's a pretty key acquisition. And then Pronger walked out of a valid contract in Edmonton and was up for grabs. And even Burke himself has been quoted as saying he doesn't deserve any credit for that acquisition. But all the other key guys, guys that are the leaders there today, and Giguere, of course, who was key, and all those other people were brought in either by Brian Murray or Pierre Gauthier in the case of Sammy Paulson. But most of that team was built by Brian Murray. He's a very smart hockey man. So he is in the position, I think, and I don't think, you know, you'd be shocked if I suggested that by the time the next round starts, he'll have the only Canadian team alive in the playoffs.
Yeah.
and he deserves it. And you look at that team, and, you know, as a Canadian, that's the team that I'll be cheering for next week. And the Spezza could be back in action. He's had his back operation. And you look at what that team did during the course of the year, and I like Paul McLean a lot, too. I knew him very well when he played in Winnipeg, and I'm sure you guys remember him. And he was always a classy guy. He was a very good, high-level player. And I'd like to see him. Now, you guys want to see Paul McLean do well?
Absolutely. I mean, the way I thought he did a great job in that series.
yeah, he did. And you know, he went to Detroit and learned a lot there. There's a lot of people in Detroit who know a lot of things, and Paul was part of that group. And, you know, they've had some good people there. Unfortunately, one of them is deceased now in Brad McCrimmon. But they've had people go through that organization, and when you have a very solid organization, if you're going to stay there for quite a while, as these people do, you have to pick it up, or else you wouldn't be part of the organization to begin with. And I can see Ottawa surprising people. In the next round, they're going to be playing Pittsburgh, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm acting obviously as if the Leafs lose, which they may not, but I could see Ottawa knocking off Pittsburgh.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Al Strachan. Al is a Hockey Hall of Fame journalist. He was with the Globe and Mail for a number of years and the Toronto Sun for a number of years as well. Al, moving to the West Coast, the Vancouver Canucks laid an egg. I mean, that's the most charitable term I can use for it. You know, who bears the brunt of the responsibility for that unmitigated disaster?
It's easy to say that it would be Mike Gillis, but then if you say that, you're saying, well, this guy laid an egg by getting too much talent. Sam Pollock, who I always considered to be the greatest general manager in the history of the game when he was with Montreal, built that dynasty, the last serious dynasty, I guess, that we've had in hockey, if you don't count the Edmonton one, which sputtered a bit along the way, always felt that everything started in goal, and he stockpiled goalies, and sometimes it wasn't fair to the individuals. Sometimes some very, very good goalies never got a chance to play in the National Hockey League because they were playing for the Nova Scotia Voyageurs, which was their farm team, and they just couldn't get there, and that was the way it went. But Sam always had about four or five good goalies, and Mike Gillis got two excellent goalies, and then that's where the problems began. And so the problem there largely, well, I shouldn't say largely, but a good part of it has to do with the salary cap, which I always thought was idiotic, and then the fact that he's got too much talent. So then, as well, the Sedins are getting on. You know, it's been a long time since they were brought in, and then they had some injuries. So I think you share the blame, but always is the case. The guy who is the captain of the ship has to take more blame, I think, than anyone, and then that would have to be Michael Gillis, who I like a lot and I respect a lot. But and I think if you listen to what he was saying the other day, he himself said that he had to take the brunt of the blame, and that now they were going to change course and do something else about it.
What do you make of his comments in terms of kind of the way the league has gone back to maybe the rules that were pre-lockout as opposed to just after the lockout?
I don't think that's totally true. I think the problem is that there's inconsistency in the officiating, and Gary Bettman, for some reason, well, I know what the reason was, because he didn't want the referees to be in the position whereby they were known by the fans. He wanted all the referees to be faceless and interchangeable.
Yeah.
And forced all the good referees out of the game. Well, I shouldn't say good, but all the experienced, and probably therefore good as well. So we lost the likes of Schick and Koharski and Billy McCreary and Dan Marowelli and all these people, and brought in a bunch of guys who try their best, I'm sure, but you're never sure what they're going to call from one night to the next.
True. Yeah.
And I think Gillis is still smarting over that series, the Boston series, the final, which appalled me. I'm not really a fan of any given team. I lean a little bit sometimes towards the Canadian teams, but I just thought the officiating in that was so one-sided, and apparently it was because they had spoken out about the officiating that you just saw Boston get away with so much. But that was 2 years ago, and I don't think you really see it anymore today. You see a lot of inconsistency. I thought that the L.A.-St. Louis series was very efficiently refereed. You know, there were a couple little things that you might argue with, but they are human, and that's going to happen. But over the course of that series, I thought they let the teams play a good, solid game with lots of physical activity and no cheap penalties, nothing to destroy the flow of the game, nothing to really turn the games that way one way or another that much. And yet in some of these other ones, you say, why would he be calling that now? You know, and it just, so I think it's just inconsistency more than anything. I don't think that they've gone back to what they used to have.
Al, sticking in the same ballpark as officiating and looking at the suspensions that we saw earlier in the playoffs, how do you think that the NHL Department of Player Safety, including Brendan Shanahan, handled the suspensions given to Eric Greiba, Andrew Ferentz, and Justin Abdelkader? Do you think they've done a good job, or is there something that you'd like to see improved?
Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. I didn't like the one to Greiba. I don't think that he did anything wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's he supposed to do? Let the guy go past him?
That's right. Yeah.
The guy has touched the puck, he hits him, and he doesn't target the head. And I listened to Brendan's explanation, and again, Brendan's a guy I know very well, and I like a lot, and I respect him very much, but that doesn't mean that I can't disagree with him on occasion, and I'm sure he would disagree with me. I just didn't see anything in that that really even warranted a penalty in the first place, just because the guy is hurt. You can't start giving out penalties and suspensions every time somebody gets hurt. Hockey is a high-speed, high-contact game and played with hard equipment, and people are going to get hurt. You have to accept that. So I didn't see any targeting of the head. I just saw a defenseman come up, a guy is reaching for the puck, he touches the puck as well, and then they are very close, going at a good rate of speed, mm-hmm. and they collide, and the one guy gets badly hurt, and that's the way things are. And then to say afterwards that he deserves a 2-game suspension, well, why? For what? You know? And did you see that as a suspendable one?
No, we didn't. I mean, it was... That's a hockey play.
Well, and if Greiba lets him go, exactly. He's not playing in the next game.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So now the Abdelkader one, yeah, I suppose you can make a case for that. Just because he leaped a little bit. But, you know, if you're going to throw guys out for 2 games every time they leap at somebody, Darcy Tucker's career would have been about 4 games. Yeah. So, and it's the playoffs, and again, you know, you want this level of intensity, and certainly you don't want people to get hurt, but I think that the Department of Player Safety sometimes has to start with the premise people will get hurt. And if they get hurt, it isn't an automatic suspension. People are going to get hurt playing hockey, and I accept that, and they don't seem to accept that.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Al Strachan.
Al, what do you make of the hire of Joe Sakic in Colorado? And do you think his role is going to kind of be similar to like kind of Kevin Lowe lurking over Tambellini and now McTavish?
I don't think that Joe's role has changed an awful lot from what he was, actually. I think Sherman's always been the bean counter, and Joe's had big input. I think they've just sort of made it official so that if anything comes of it, you know, any discussions within the organization, Joe has the clout. But Joe is a very smart hockey guy and a quiet guy pretty well, but he knows the game and he knows what to do and he knows the people in it. And I think that'll be a good move for the team. And you always have to consider as well, like as fans, you always think of, well, what's this going to do on the ice? But a place like Colorado at the moment, you have to think of what it's going to do off the ice as well, because that team isn't drawing that well. And it's a place that is a good hockey town, but it's a place that has high expectations. And Joe is revered there. And so I think you have to put him in there. You know, much as many people suggested in Toronto, bring Doug Gilmore back and give him a position, or Wendell and these people, and it's a good thing. So do you want to just bring him back to come around and shake hands like Daryl Sittler does, or do you want to bring him in and have him actually do something? Well, I think Joe is capable of doing something, and I think it's a good move, but a lot of it is PR.
What did you, you know, we mentioned Edmonton before. What did you think of kind of that bizarre press conference and then the release of getting rid of Tambellini and then subsequently the bizarre press conference and the hiring of Craig McTavish?
Well, McT has, you know, been there forever. We came, after two Stanley Cups there, I think, so we won about 85 or so that he came there. And so, you know, he's been there almost 30 years or something. And that organization just sort of does seem to feed on itself, doesn't it? And you have to wonder if it wouldn't be better to bring in someone from outside, to bring in some fresh blood, just a person, just bring him in based on nothing but his hockey acumen, rather than based upon the fact that he had once been a part of the Edmonton organization. But it's such an inbred organization that you wonder, would it make any sense to do that? Because somebody who is brought in is now such an outsider that he's not going to get much help from the rest of them. So you run into that position when you start feeding from within all the time. You end up shutting down all the other options. But McTavish is a good man, and he knows what he's doing, and I think Kevin is not used to being criticized an awful lot, and certainly not in the Edmonton media. That they are one of the most notorious pro-Homer aggregations in hockey. I remember one time when we were watching a game, and it was in the playoffs, and the other team, I think it was Vancouver's, went up 3-0, and somebody in the press box said, well, that'll take the Edmonton media right out of this game. and there's a lot to that. I mean, you know, you look at that Edmonton media and ask yourself, when was the last time you read anything critical of anything the Oilers have done? Other than by people who left. Once you leave, they usually got a knife in your back on the way out. But if you're there, you don't get much criticism, to say the least, and that's been the case over the years. But now, lately, it has started a bit.
Yeah,
so some of these guys like Kevin and that aren't accustomed to that. They're used to see, you know, the guys come into the press conference with their tape recorder and their pom-poms, you know? Well, pom-poms are disappearing a little bit now, and they don't know what to do with all that. So Kevin reacted a bit, but Kevin's a good guy, too, and he's another smart hockey man, you know, and I know that I keep saying now over the course of this interview, I keep saying, well, he's a good guy. And astonishingly, they are. These people in hockey, for the most part, are really good people. I love the game, and I love the people in it, and that's why I ended up doing it, because I started doing all the other sports. But you run into people there who think they really matter, and they think they're God's gift to the humanity and everything. Hockey are just basically good, normal people who want to do their best and have good values, and so many of them are in hockey that I end up keep saying that sort of thing all the time, but it's true. Kevin's a good man. He'll do a good job.
And Al, we have no problem with you saying that, because you're a good guy, and that's why we keep asking you to come on this radio show. But we've sorry?
I appreciate that.
We've got one final question for you here, and it has to do with that revolutionary social media site called Twitter. I follow you on Twitter, and I think you're hilarious because you don't take any guff from anybody. But we have a question that has been asked to you on Twitter, and you've been responding to it a lot lately, and for people to follow you, it's Winsford99 on Twitter. But with this year's playoffs making almost every Canadian goalie seeming a little bit human, who do you think actually ends up starting for Team Canada in Sochi? Is it Roberto Luongo, or is it somebody maybe that we haven't expected based on the way guys like Fleury have played in this year's playoffs?
Well, as I was saying on Twitter, and the problem with Twitter, of course, 140 characters, and people want to explain the meaning of life in 140 characters. You know, it's a bit difficult. But I was saying that you've got to wait until next year. That goalies are a notorious breed. You can have a goalie who's terrible one year, and then next year he is the hottest thing in the game. You know, I think we've all seen that. So I think you should wait a little bit till next year. And I suggested, you know, who knows? I mean, even it could be even a guy like Elliot, and then everybody started berating Elliot. Well, that wasn't the point. The point is it can be almost anybody. But I think right now, based upon what I'm seeing, and the right now there is the key word because it could very well change, I think I'd be starting Braden Holtby.
Yeah, it's true.
He's a Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, and he's a Hockey Hall of Fame radio guest on this program. Al Strachan, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Take care, Al. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Al Strachan, who always brings the goods. One of the best. Just a great journalist in his time, and he's always an entertaining guest on this program. In case you missed any of it, you can download that interview off of illegalcurve.com. We'll have it up there very quickly. Remus is working on that. What do you think about what Al said about some of the officiating in this first round and things of that nature?
I miss Al reading his articles. I used to love reading his articles in the Toronto Sun when I started reading him. He wrote for the Gazette way back, too.
Yeah.
With the likes of Red Fisher and such. Interesting original thoughts. I thought his comments about the officiating, I really do agree with him in terms of the face of the officials and them being anonymous and being inconsistent in what happens. It is, in reality, I mean, let's point to the discussion we had on Wednesday about the kick-in goal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there was identities on refs, you have an idea of maybe what the way they'd be thinking and what would happen. Now you don't know who any ref is.
I think probably the best-known ref now is Stephen Walkham, maybe?
And he left for a while and came back, right?
He was the director of of officiating, and then he came back onto the ice to become an official again.
He was the referee in the L.A. St. Louis game last night,
right? But the idea is that you don't know, and you don't know what's going to happen from game to game, and there's no feel of it, right? So
you know what's really funny about that is that there's two referees now, and they can't seem to get it right. But what we just want to see is consistency. Richie just touched on it. We want to see consistency in the calls. This isn't 15 years ago when we had the foot in the crease garbage. We just want to see consistent calls. We want to see video review produce consistency. And with video review, if they can't get it right, they're never going to get it right.
But they're asking people to make... Everything's a shade of gray. I mean, with the kick-ins especially.
I mean, shades?
Well, not 50. I don't know about. I don't know if it's that many shades, but
it's not the last book you read, Drew.
Richie, you read the Toronto Sun and the Globe and Mail. Drew was reading 50 Shades of Grey.
That's very clever. That's the problem. Those are just impossible calls to make.
Back to the Patrick Waugh thing that he mentioned.
Yeah, about the Habs wanting to hire him.
If you offer him, first of all, 2.45 is big money for a coach. Well, I guess that was total for the 2 years, but
no, it sounded like it was 2.45 per
year.
Yeah,
but if it was that, that's big money. Even if it's not, it's still big money. Over a mil isn't cheap.
Because
I don't think Noel's making a mil. But handing a guy a 2-year deal is kind of like
handing him a death sentence to start with. He's got, because I mean, you're telling a guy you have 2 years. Well, you really have, I mean, a year and a half to turn this thing around.
I know they kind of wasn't Bob Hartley got mentioned there when he took Calgary before he interviewed, I believe something like that. I believe he didn't leave Calgary without a contract. I know the Habs are going to consider him too, but you know, it's interesting comments he makes about Therrien because he says, you know, Bergeron's a good hire, which I agree with. And, you know, surrounding him with the likes of Rick Dudley, who's put together Ottawa team, Tampa team.
Yeah.
Ottawa team that almost made the final. The kind of the beginning of that squad that really got good. Tampa that ended up winning the cup. Chicago that ended up winning the cup. He's not as a GM of those franchises, but he's the mastermind behind a lot of that stuff.
Sure. I mean, he was in Toronto before he went to Montreal again.
How do you think Dustin Byfuglien got on the Jets?
And as far as the Colorado Avalanche,
how do you think Blake Wheeler got in the Jets?
Yep.
Yeah, he acquired all those guys when he was with Atlanta.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they deserve a lot of credit for creating that team, or putting together that team, I should say. But the way they played in that fifth game is what's going to give me a lasting impression on this team. Sure, they went from 15th in the East to 2nd in the East, but then they were a no-show. And sure, Gionta was out, and Eller was out, and Price was out. But the way they played was inexcusable. And that comes down to coaching, and that's why we posed the question to Al. But the Montreal Canadiens' future looks bright. They just have to find a way to play better as a team and overcome injuries because Ottawa had injuries. A lot of teams have injuries. It becomes an excuse.
On that point, I mean, yeah, one thing you have to like about Montreal, obviously, again, their season was successful for sure, was Galchenyuk looking real good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wow, that a talent. So there's something to be said about, you know, having that one bad year and getting that top talent and bouncing right back.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com is going to join us to talk about the Chicago Blackhawks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.